You're in with the Ghost of Radio. Welcome back to this, our shared podcast. Here we are again around the cauldron, waiting to dive in to all of our episodes of mid-century horror radio. We have really built up a little enterprise here, haven't we? As currently, hashtag copyright, the only place on the internet where you can get in-depth discussion of these episodes each and every week forever. You know, not everyone else can make that promise, but we can. We've been doing it for quite some time, and there's only more time to come. So let's plot an episode. This week, we are going to explore The Merry Widower. M-E-R-R-Y, The Merry Widower from Suspense. Here's how we play it. You go off and listen to this episode where'er ye will, on your own dime. You come back here. We discuss, we make sense, we listen to some clips we enjoy, perhaps. That's how we do it, because we want to spend our time here in the most optimal fashion of discussing rather than taking the 28 minutes it would take to listen to the episode, which you really can do anywhere. So go listen to the episode if you will. How to do that? Go to the internet, type in relicradio.com. They have everything. Or archive.org, the internet archive. They also have everything. How can two places have everything? How can they each corner that market? It's all part of the magic of the genre. Or you can go to a non-tracking search engine and type in Suspense Radio or Suspense Radio single episodes, which will take you directly to the Internet Archive. It'll pinpoint it for you with that kind of accuracy. Listen, come back. You know the drill. Off you go. See you soon. All right, we're all back from listening to The Merry Widower from Suspense. And what did you make of it? I will say, as I periodically do, yes, I go and I listen. I re-listen. Of course I do, a couple of times. So by the time I'm speaking with you, this might be the eighth time I've listened to an episode. It's all to the good. I mean, it's all for the best, because you know what we say about repeated listening. It is a treasure. I go, I listen to the whole thing just to get my head around it again, to remember precisely why it's in the cauldron. And then I listen to it again to cut the audio. So here I am back from probably my fourth or fifth time around with The Merry Widower. And it's a type of story, yes, two types of story with a twist ending all of a sudden, and the realization, the growing realization over the course of the story that your narrator is not quite right. I think they do a pretty good job with it. You do get a realistic sense, you know, for a half hour radio show, of someone who, you know, when he married Ethel, his first wife, he was fairly normal, just discontented with life. You could see how he got himself into a situation that he could dislike so much, which is not always the case. Very often we are presented with people who are unhappy in relationships, and you can only blame them, really. Like, well, why did you ever get into this relationship if you hate it so much? Here, as both Ethel and his second wife, Hilda, will say, he has really changed. We are meeting him not at the moment of him really losing his sense of reality, but about halfway through that process, and we sadly get to see it through to the end. Well, let's start at the beginning before we get to the end and get our intro to Suspense. This is from October of 1944, so we've got the nice, long Suspense intro with the full Roma wine spot. That's Roma Wines, R-O-M-A. It's been a while since we heard an early Suspense intro with the man in black, without Harlow, the terrible spark plug guy. We're loving this already.
Now, Roma Wines present... Suspense! Tonight, The Merry Widower, starring Reginald Gardner. Suspense is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live, to your happiness in entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glass full would be very pleasant as Roma Wines bring you Suspense. This is the man in black here for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California, who tonight from Hollywood brings you as star Mr. Reginald Gardner and a suspense play in grim three-quarter time. And so, with The Merry Widower and with the performance of Mr. Gardner, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
The feel-good classic of this old suspense, the original suspense intro. All right, so we're going to jump right into our tale where George is singing the song. It's the Merry Widow Waltz. And, you know, the internet's right there. You just used it to find the episode. You can look up the little history of the Merry Widow. For now, all we need to know is the song, right? And I think by the end of listening to this, you know the song. Boy, do they overdo it with the music where they keep playing the frantic, crazy version of the song. It's actually nice to hear him singing the original as we come into this scene. And again, I do think it's well done that even though they're fighting and Ethel is getting sick of him, you feel the remnants, like you feel the backstory that at one time he was charming and they were in love. And she says to him later, I know you're not like every other man. And in most ways, you are a wonderful husband. We don't expect to hear her say that, do we? We really get in this short interchange a sense of somebody who was a good person to be with, who is losing his mind. And that's leading him to be abusive to his wife. We know that there's usually no reason given whatsoever. It's just taken for granted that a man is going to be abusive to his wife. And what of it? That's just nature. Here we're given that very rare character in mid-century horror radio of a man who is losing his sanity, who is somewhat sympathetic. You really do get the feeling that he's no longer himself. And he would not be treating his wife badly if that weren't happening. So that's a lot to pull out of, you know, what, 3 minutes of audio? But I think it's really there. I think they managed to do it in a really good way. So that by the end of it, when he tells her to shut up, you really feel it as the horrible change that it is.
While we're swaying to the playing of the dance,
George.
Eyes will glisten as
George Munsey, if you don't listen to me,
my good woman, pray, what is the meaning of this intrusion?
What?
Oh, hello, Ethel.
I say, who do you think you're calling my good woman?
For a moment, I didn't know who it was, that's all.
You didn't know who it was? Well, who did you think it was, the servant?
Please, Ethel.
Not that it wouldn't be nice if we did have a servant.
We shall, my dear. We shall.
Of course, that's what you say. That's what you always say about everything. Sometimes I wonder why I ever married you, George Munsey. It hasn't changed my life much. When I met you, I was waiting on people all day long in Hoffman's restaurant, and now all day long I wait on you.
You don't think by any chance, do you, that I'm unworthy to be waited on? That would be amusing.
Oh, George, it isn't that. I'm no snob, and you know it. And I'm not afraid of a little hard work, either. But you're always making such great plans and such big promises.
Yes, well, I have big plans. Someday you'll realize, my dear, that you've married a rather remarkable man.
Well, remarkable man. If you don't hurry up and get down to work, you'll be fired.
I'm not going to work this morning.
You're what?
I said I'm not going to work this morning.
George Muncy, are you crazy?
What? What did you say?
What's come over you lately, anyway?
Ah, then you've noticed something.
I should say I have. Wearing wing collars in the daytime all of a sudden and buying yourself a fancy hat and a cane.
Really, Ethel, it's quite appropriate that I should wear a Homburg hat and carry a walking stick. After all,
appropriate, is it? Well, I haven't had a new hat since I can remember, and you know how we have to scrape along here, and now you're not going to work. Well, where are you going?
I'm going up to London.
London?
Yes, there are certain very important affairs that I must take care of in London, my dear.
And just what are these very important affairs, Your Royal Highness?
Why did you call me that?
Because you act so high and mighty sometimes. Oh, George, why can't you be a little more practical?
My dear, has it ever occurred to you that I might be different from other men?
Oh, George, you are. I know you are. In most ways, you're the most wonderful husband a girl could ever have. But really...
Yes, perhaps it's time. Yeah, I think it is. Time that I took you into my confidence.
Well, perhaps it's time I took you into mine. There's just 10 shillings 6pence in the house to buy groceries for the rest of the month.
Please, Ethel, don't be sordid.
Sordid? Well, if you think 3 meals a day is so sordid all of a
sudden... Shut up!
George!
You're not fit to share my confidence. You're not fit to share my confidence or my station.
George!
I didn't play the frantic little theme there that they stuck on the end of that like they always do. So he keeps going to see the play, The Merry Widower, which is about a prince who is in disguise. You got that from your own listening, who falls in love with, you know, a peasant girl. And he meets a woman there who... Again, this is what saves the story from just being a wreck. It's not that he decides he will build a fantasy around her. It's that he really has lost touch with reality. And in a very convoluted way, because he has lost touch with reality, he is floundering. He is lost. He's desperately seeking something that makes sense to him. And in this case, it's her. She is the noble and beautiful woman who is below his station, but so noble inside. He thinks he recognizes her. Seeing her helps him to feel like he's not going crazy. That he isn't meant to spend the rest of his life with this woman called Ethel who he doesn't even know. Seeing Hilda makes him think, oh, at last, I am getting my grip on life and I can start to live normally. It's this turnaround that is very powerful in the story.
Daniel, are you married?
Married? No.
Well, I don't see why you act so skittish about it. But I suppose you're like all the rest, you've a guilty conscience.
No, I have not.
Some liaison with a pretty barmaid, like the prince in the play. That's it, isn't it, Mr. Well, Prince?
Yes, there is a little liaison, yes.
And now you're tired of her, and you're wondering how to break it off. Is that it?
Yes.
My poor Prince Charming.
Miss Callamere, if you could help
no.
me, I...
No, Daniel. That's something you must do for yourself. But I can tell you this. It's best to be strong about it. Break it straight off, open and above board, like a true gentleman. Isn't it now?
Yes. Yes, of course.
And things like that are always so unsatisfactory for a young man of your station in life, aren't they?
My station? Yes. Well, what's that?
Why, 12 o'clock, I expect.
I'll have to hurry.
Daniel! Wait! Where are you going?
Home.
So, yes, that was Hilda, who has fallen for him. She doesn't know anything about his reality, using that term in a guarded way. And we see there that she is the one who actually is living a fantasy. She wants him to be, as she always says, her Prince Charming. She's the one manufacturing a fantasy out of this stranger for herself and for him. He is not. He is trying to regain what he thinks is reality. He wants to be living as he's supposed to be, naturally. He wants his real world because he thinks that he is a royal person and that would be reality. So really it's Hilda who is the person who's playing a dangerous game of pretending that a stranger is a prince. When he thinks of her as his fair lady, he thinks she really is. It's not, oh, I'm going to start thinking of you this way. He thinks she is. So he feels that he has finally climbed up on the shores of an island after being shipwrecked, while she's just heading out to Fantasy Island. Well, she's definitely planted the idea unwittingly in his head that he can't stay with Ethel. Now, you tell me as you listen to this scene again if he means to kill her. Does he really mean to kill her the whole time? It's an open question.
I did an awfully foolish thing today.
What?
I spent all our money, or most of it. Here, look what I got.
What's that?
A little box. It's for cigarettes or hairpins or whatever you like. But when you open it, it plays that tune you like so much. See?
Well, that was very thoughtful of you, Ethel. It's really quite appropriate.
Here now, I didn't get it for you. Look what else I got.
Well, what are those?
Why, you can see what they are. A sand bucket and a sailboat.
Well, why did you get them?
Oh, I know it's silly and all, but... George, if we were to have a baby...
A baby?
Yes, mind you, I didn't say we will.
It's impossible.
Why, it's not impossible either.
I tell you it is. It's not the way the thing should happen at all.
The way what should happen?
It's all wrong. It's not fitting to my station. It can't happen.
Oh, it can't? Well, if I want to have a baby, it's little enough I get out of life.
Ethel!
George, I thought you'd be happy if you thought that...
Of course, my dear, of course, yes. The idea just came as something of a surprise, that's all.
Then you mean...
Well, let's talk about it in the morning, my dear. I think now I shall take a bath.
A bath at this time of night?
Good for the nerves, you know. Relaxing.
Well, do hurry, then.
Shan't be long.
George?
I can't hear you.
Oh, it's no great matter.
Well, what is it? Why don't you come in here and talk to me?
Well, all right. George... Don't you think a baby would like this music box? It is rather sweet, isn't it? Oh, I thought you were going to take a bath.
I've changed my mind.
George, what are you doing? Look out! I'm falling!
The thing kept playing as she lay there in the water. I looked at her very closely. Wasn't necessary now to do anything more. There was a deep bruise on her forehead, just above the temple. She was no longer breathing. I got my hat and my walking stick, and I left the house.
They really step on his line there. He left the house. They were so eager to get that crazy Calliope music playing that they had to stomp all over that. It seems like he went home thinking that he would simply send this woman away, whoever she was. He would send her away. And the plan of killing her only comes at the very last moment, not exactly sure why. We believe she's dead. Of course we do. Why wouldn't we? He says that she stopped breathing. So... we know now from listening through the whole thing that she actually was not dead, which is a huge surprise in the story. It's kind of indicative of the fact that he doesn't do a thorough job of it. It's distasteful to think of committing a murder that's beneath him. It's beneath his station. I think he probably walks out of that bathroom thinking he didn't actually do anything else, that fate took it out of his hands, that she knew she was surplus to demand, and she simply got rid of herself. So now he's going to go and tell Hilda that he is a free man, and she's going to love the fantasy romance of that.
Shall I tell you more? Yes, I believe I shall. You've been very attentive, and it pleases us to have you share our confidence. Very well, then. At the performance that evening, the lovely widow and I sealed our betrothal. Miss Calamere.
Why, it's my Prince Charming.
Oh, Miss Calamere, may we have our walk again, please?
Why, of course. Really, I hardly expected to see you at all this evening. You know, you were rather a naughty boy to leave me so suddenly last night without a word or anything.
Yes, I suppose I was, but...
You were going home, you said.
Yes, to my lodgings.
Oh, of course. Tell me, did you enjoy the performance tonight?
I didn't see it. I don't want ever to see it or hear it again.
Oh. Daniel, do you have something to tell me?
Yes.
Is it about your... about her?
Yes.
Did you do as I told you?
Yes. It's finished.
My poor dear boy. And that's why you don't want to hear the music anymore. Because it reminds you of things you'd rather forget.
Yes.
That was very good of you, Daniel, and very brave. I hope it wasn't necessary to hurt her too much.
No, it didn't hurt her very much.
And what are your plans
now? I've come to you, Miss Callum. I've come to you.
Daniel, you mean...
You're the only person in the world who understands me, Miss Callum.
Oh, my Prince Charming. It's like a dream, like the play that brought us together.
We are the play now.
Until death do us part.
Yes, until death do us part.
No, maybe it did not hurt her very much. Well, he seems to make a go of it once again with his second wife. He, in the scene that follows that, it's really well done. I didn't pull it up here, limited time, but it's well done that everything she says to him that is kind of like, okay, maybe you want to get your act together and live like a grown man, he interprets as the attentions, you know, that a royal person deserves. Oh, I will set you up a bank account and I will buy you a hat. And I will do all of these things for you. And he is still apparently good enough when he's allowed to be who he thinks he is to please her. Like, he must be living up to the fantasy that she built around him. Yeah, it's her building a fantasy around him, not the other way around. For him, it is no longer fantasy. So he is somehow going to work, you know, in a little gift store, a curio store, not very... you know, becoming, but he has found a way to try to understand that. And the music boxes come in and we feel a little bit of tension when he says, you know, he goes and he stuffs them all in her bag and then claims to have sold them. We know something bad's going to come of that, but we don't even get to that point. We think we're going to have that showdown with him and his boss, but we go instead right through to the first ending. So let's roll right through to that. Where this time we do get a very deliberate murder coming right on the heels of the discovery that the first murder never even really happened.
Is that you, Daniel?
Yes, my dear.
Well, it's about time. I've been looking for my alligator bag.
I was about to tell you, my dear. I borrowed it.
Borrowed it? What for? Where is it?
It was stolen.
Stolen? Well, how?
You see, I was riding on the underground, and some chap grabbed it and dashed out of the door with it before I could stop him.
My beautiful bag. Oh, Daniel, how could you have been so careless?
Well, it can't be helped now, my dear. I'll save up and buy you another one.
Stolen. Well, at least we can phone the police.
Police?
Well, why not? That's what one usually does about stolen belongings, isn't it?
It's not the slightest use, my dear.
Well, there's no harm in it. Oh, I'll answer it, Daniel. Yes? Why, yes, my husband and I were just... Yes. Yes, that would be if... Oh. Well, that is odd. Why, yes, come right up. Yes, we'll both be here. That was the police, Daniel. They found my bag.
No, they couldn't have.
They saw a beggar carrying it. They thought it looked odd, such a nice bag, and they found my name on it inside.
Oh.
Daniel, it was full of music boxes. 36 of them.
All right, then. They were down at the store. They got on my nerves.
And Daniel, they all played the same piece of music. The tune from our play that you used to like so much.
That's right.
And you haven't ever wanted to hear again.
Hilda.
Since... Well, Daniel?
I'm very tired, Hilda. I'm going to take a bath.
Daniel, I want to talk to you.
Very well. You may talk to me while I run my bath.
Daniel, something's happened. You're different.
I'm no different.
Well, why do you hate that piece of music so much? Enough to do such a crazy thing.
What?
Well, it's because of her, isn't it?
Yes. No.
What did you do that night? You killed her. Oh, who are you?
I am His Royal Highness, Prince Danilo of Masovia.
Daniel?
What I have done in the interest of my royal house and of my kingdom. And what I am about to do...
Oh, that is the police. I'll go send them away. Daniel, open that door. Let me out! Daniel!
What do you want?
I'm Inspector Davis, Scotland Yard.
That's him. Oh, George.
Ethel.
Oh, George, why did you leave me? I'd fallen in the bathroom and cracked my head. And when I woke up, you were gone.
You'd fallen?
We've been trying to find you for this lady for quite a while, Mr. Munsey. All we had to go on was your taste in music.
George.
And when this bag showed up with the music boxes in it... By the way, is this your other wife's bag?
Oh, George, there was someone else.
So you don't want to answer, eh? Well, you better call the other lady down here, Mr. Munsey. It looks as though you'd have to answer to a charge of bigamy, my lad.
Bigamy. Bigamy. Bigamy!
Oh, maybe Hilda's not dead either? Maybe she's going to come down those stairs. It's a false note that Ethel doesn't remember him advancing on her in that murderous way that made her fall and hit her head. But I guess she hit her head, so she can't remember. It's an unsatisfying, dissatisfying, either one ending in that it just feels... It feels a little bit rushed. But it's also about as good as it's going to get. I mean, I think it's a good first ending. We know we got a second ending coming up because it does show that if anyone is allowed time to live deeper and deeper into a fantasy, whether they think it is a fantasy or not, whether they are Daniel, in quotes, or Hilda, it's going to end in disaster. It will end in tragedy. Because reality, it's a terrible thing, but it is the only thing. So he was only going to get worse and worse and worse. He just was. And that question Hilda asks him so agonizingly, like, who are you? He feels he knows the answer to that question. Why doesn't anyone else know it the way he knows it? What is so hard for others to understand? That he is a prince. There was only one way that could ever end. So let's go to the second ending where we get it really spelled out for us. I think we knew this ending was coming. We didn't really need it, but it is saved from being redundant by the voice acting at the very conclusion of it.
I have been returned at last to my rightful place and have taken up residence at my castle in Arsovia. There are heavy bars upon the window for the protection of my royal person, and I am most courteously treated by all my court attendants. Even now I hear the approach of my prime minister, whose quaint conceit it is to call himself my doctor. He has been on a personal errand at my request. Did you get it? Did you bring us what we asked?
Yes. I managed to find one. Here it is.
Ah, yes, yes. That is it. We thank you. Doubtless it seems a trivial thing, a mere trinket, but it reminds us of so many things that we cannot quite remember, like some dream of another life. And it will serve to take our mind from cares of state, which is most necessary, since we know that now we shall be here all the rest of our life.
Oh, that is well done at the end there. You think you hear him inhale. You feel like you hear him take that breath at the very end. The rest, all of our life. And it's as if he can't go on. Finally, at last, he just can't go anymore. For a terrible, brief moment, he realizes that he is not actually a prince. That he was Ethel's husband, that he was George. Oh, it's really, that's really good. Ooh, so we are saved at the very end, and it gives us an extra chill that we wouldn't have had normally. So pretty good here from The Merry Widower. Let's get our suspense outro and learn whom we have to thank.
Reginald Gardner appeared through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox, producers of the derelict Zanuck Technicolor production, Wilson. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Miss Lucille Ball as star of Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Now, that was the shortened outro. I didn't do the long Roma spot there, but I think we got enough from that. That was The Merry Widower from Suspense. Pretty good. Not really a story just about his mental state, his delusion, but about many people's delusions. The women who cling on to the idea that they know him and he knows them. The first wife who clings to the past, who he used to be, trying to still see it. The second wife who has completely fabricated an identity for him. The boss who pretends that he is just another employee. The coworker who pretends that he just sees a regular guy. It's about everybody's inability to perceive reality or to accept it. And which one is worse? The willful refusal to accept it, or the sometimes helpless inability to perceive and to live it? Well, maybe that's one of the questions we are left asking at the end of this. Whether we are sitting on our thrones in Los Angeles, Bangkok, Toledo, Edmonton, or Minneapolis. Well, whatever our station in life, we all know that we will all be right back here in a week around the cauldron with each other to share confidences, to see and perceive each other's reality, and to spend a little time in this mid-century horror radio genre. Maybe it doesn't have the most practical purpose in the world, but I think there's some message we could take away about it. Well, maybe somebody else could put it better than I can. For now, I will just say, until we meet again around the cauldron next week, go your way. Be safe, be happy, and I'll see you soon.
We thank you. Doubtless it seems a trivial thing, a mere trinket, but it reminds us of so many things that we cannot quite remember, like some dream of another life.